Welcome to The Next Track, a podcast about how people listen to music today. I'm Doug Adams.
And I'm Kirk McElhern.
We self-produce The Next Track podcast and want to keep it ad-free, so we rely on contributions from listeners for support. You can help us by making a regular donation via Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thenexttrack. And thanks. This is the first time in the podcast history where we actually have, and you'll appreciate this, a three-episode arc. We've got an arc. We finally achieved arcness. A couple of episodes ago, we were talking about gear acquisition syndrome, which I've elevated to gear acquisition disorder. And then we talked last week about Kirk getting a new CD player, and we talked in general about CD stuff, and we have a ton of more information regarding CD players and things like that. And tell us what you've been doing the past week or so.
But will it only be three episodes? Will there be more? Will there be a whole season?
Right. It could turn into that.
So I don't know if it's a gear acquisition syndrome or disorder, but talking about that and looking at amplifiers, I decided to order that NAD C3050 amplifier. And I would admit half of the decision was the aesthetics, the old-fashioned aesthetics with the knobs and the VU meters. And the other half was, this is an amplifier with, I bought the one with the Blue OS module. Blue OS is, I guess it's a music streaming operating system. Initially, you would buy a device that was the hub and then stream it. And NAD, who owns Blue OS, integrated it in a module that goes into a couple of their amplifiers. And I was interested in that idea. Plus, it has direct live room correction. So the kind of thing, you set up a microphone, it balances according to the frequencies it detects. And it had AirPlay, because the amp itself doesn't have AirPlay. By the way, very few amps have AirPlay anymore. That's interesting. So I got the amplifier, and I spent 4 hours the first night trying to set it up. The amplifier itself was easy to plug in, and then I wanted to set up this Dirac Live thing, and I kept getting errors like signal-to-noise ratio too low, and I looked, the instructions were pathetically bad. And I finally, after 2 hours, I realized that the problem was that it wasn't detecting any sound from my subwoofer. After another hour, I found that a number of NAD amplifiers have problems with low subwoofer output, and I finally realized that there was no subwoofer output to my amplifier. Now, we talk about technology a lot, and I've probably said that I hate technology on this show. I hate technology where you don't take it out of the box and plug it in. My CD player, I'd had to return it because it would play about a half an hour of a CD and then stop. I called up the retail and they said, happens in shipping sometime. It gets bumped around and the laser head needs to be realigned. So got that back.
It's a common CD problem. We used to have that problem, as I told you, with CD players at the radio station all the time. There's always one on the engineer's desk that needed to get, you know, back into shape.
Right. So I got a replacement. Plug it in, it works, right? That's what audio equipment should be. You plug it in, it works. You shouldn't spend minutes, hours, days to try and figure it out. So I called the retailer and I told them about this. I checked online. I saw a number of forum posts about Blue OS and subwoofer output. And I said, you know what? I don't want to have to deal with buggy software in my amplifier. So I returned it. Now, the retailer called me back and they said, well, the subwoofer works for us. And that's interesting because I've got a subwoofer that I've had, I want to say, for 10 years. It's worked in multiple amplifiers that I've had over the years. I'll talk about my replacement amplifier that I just bought. It works fine with that, and it's never been a problem. So I don't have enough audiophile smarts to figure out the watts to amps ratio to make a subwoofer compatible. I mean, I looked it up. There are some issues if you have two subwoofers, but I couldn't figure it out, and it's just not worth my time. So I ended up buying your dad's amplifier, Cambridge Audio CAX61. Cambridge Audio is a British brand, been around for years. Their stuff is good. It's relatively decently priced, good quality, plugged it in, works, no problem. Subwoofer works, CD player works, everything works. And so I guess the moral of this story is don't put software in your amplifier or other devices. I was looking at some of these streaming devices, right, that they make that combine streaming and amplifier, and I keep thinking, you know, that software is not going to last forever. You can get an amp from the 70s. It still works today. But if you've got software that's required for the amplifier to work, it's not going to last very long. You're not going to be able to hand it down to your grandchildren.
I really like the idea of using an external receiver of some sort. I believe you bought a Belkin AirPlay type receiver that's, you know, obviously exterior to the amp. And so if that busts, you can afford to get a new one. But if it busts in the, if the software is going to be a problem in the amp, then you're really, SOL. So that's the best way to go, I think, modularly, like we used to do in the 70s.
Yeah. So I did buy a Belkin. I forget the actual name. I'll put a link in the show notes. I ordered one from Amazon in the UK. I don't know if they do this in the US. They have something called Amazon Warehouse where they sell returns a bit cheaper. So knew it was 77 pounds. Amazon Warehouse was 62 pounds. I got it. It didn't have the power plug.
Huh.
So I returned it and I ordered a new one. This, I've been the bad luck, right? So I got a new one.
I feel bad for you.
I have ordered many things from Amazon Warehouse, like a food processor, things like that. I've never had a problem. It's the
lately, though, you've been getting a lot of busted gear sent to your house.
I know. It's amazing. I know. So I plugged it in. You hold your phone near it. So it detects it because basically it's a HomeKit device.
Ah.
Right? So it detects it in HomeKit. So you can control it through HomeKit. It adds it to HomeKit and then boom, it's there. So that connects with a Toslink cable from that to the amplifier. So it gets a digital output. Now, AirPlay is limited to 24-bit, 48 kilohertz, so it's not high resolution. I can also plug the amplifier into USB if I want high res, and that's, you know, a next step. I have tried it out. It works. It's very easy, but it is an alternative. Now, the problem with that is this doesn't really work if you plug it into a USB hub connected to a computer. It has to be connected to the computer.
Yeah. I wouldn't mess with any hubs. You have no idea what's gathering there in the hub. You have no idea.
Well, but it's not recognized. I tried that, and I've only got four USB ports behind my iMac, and I've got a CalDigit Thunderbolt TS4 thing with a whole bunch of ports. And so if I do want to plug it into the iMac at any time, anyway, it's, you know,
stuff like that. You know, I would rather have it be a discrete line from the computer to directly to the device. It's just that, I don't know, I think there's a lot of power issues with hubs and things like that, that sometimes just don't make happy bedfellows with USB plugging into your stereo. I love your new amp, by the way. It's Cambridge Audio, as you said, is a great company. But this is like, it's not high end. It's right at the sweet spot for guys like us. We don't want to spend more than $1,000 on an amp.
Yep.
We just don't want to do it. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
This thing, it's got, well, first of all, I know I'm going to brag about your device. It's got four analog inputs. Five, if you count the mini stereo jack on the front, so you can quickly plug something into it. It's like, listen, I want you to hear this thing on my phone. Boom. And you plug it into the front of the amp. It's got four digital inputs. It's got two opticals. It's got, as you said, the Toslink, the coaxial. And what's the other one?
USB.
Oh, yes. I guess USB, of course, would be digital. Duh. So the other great thing about this is that I hate it when manufacturers label the inputs, like they're pre-labeled. Here's the CD, here's the DVD, here's your phono, here's your aux. These are labeled D1, D2, D3, D4, A1, A2. All you have to learn is the funny little letter number thing for your whatever you plugged in. You got it memorized. Now, they're not the only company that does that, but still, that's so sensible. And the other sensible thing that they do is a small thing is when you're... if you have to pull the machine out from the wall and you have to make some connections while you're looking over the back of it, they've labeled all the inputs upside down.
No, they're both. They're both right side up and upside down. They're below and above.
Yes. They're not the only one who does that. But you don't find that on your Radio Shack amplifiers, you know? I would expect it to see it on higher end Cambridge Audio, but the fact that it's in this package, and plus just the number of inputs is divine. I love the flexibility. That's what's great about it. It's very flexible.
It also has Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried it yet. So this is the aptX HD Bluetooth that goes up to 2448. And now apparently this is, I'm not sure if this is entirely lossless, but it's very high quality. It's the highest quality Bluetooth, I think, that's out there. So this means anyone could come with a phone and play to it, right? You don't have to worry about getting on an airplane network. You can just Bluetooth it from anything. So I haven't tried it. It is one of the big advantages of this is the number of connections, as you say, is far beyond what anyone needs today. But this future proofs it. So one of the main reasons I want it because it has two speaker zones, right? And I may have explained here that I have two listening areas. One is on my desk and the other is a sofa with two speakers opposite. There aren't that many with two speaker zones anymore. So I'm going to tell you a story. Last week, when I decided that I was returning the NAD amp, I said, okay, I want to look for something, and I know my, I want two speaker zones, potentially AirPlay, but I can, you know, adapt to that. And I thought, it wouldn't be bad if I could buy local, right? Now, I bought this amp from Richer Sounds, which is a company who owns Cambridge Audio, I think they own Cambridge Audio, right? They bought Cambridge Audio years ago. We have a music hi-fi place in my local town. I figured maybe they'll have something that's interesting. Maybe, you know, if I buy local, it's always better for the economy. You know that feeling when you go into a store and they clearly give you this body language that they don't want you as a customer?
Yeah.
When I told them what I was looking for, two speaker zones, oh, I don't know if that exists.
My goodness.
And then he went on to, like, some website to look, and he says, well, I don't see any here. He said, and he gave me his business card, and he said, well, why don't you email me what you want, and I'll get back to you. It was like, show me to the door, why don't you?
Yeah.
Now, I have a feeling that, so this company, I believe, originally was only selling audio, but they also have TVs, and I have a feeling that their main work is setting up AV systems for people, relatively well-off people in the area, because there were a couple of youngish people moving boxes in and out like they were going to an installation or something. So I have a feeling they don't want someone who walks off the street to buy an amplifier.
Yeah.
Even though I did buy my previous Sonos amp from them 5 or 6 years ago. And again, it was like I could buy from Sonos or I could buy local. So I thought I'd buy local. But the fact that someone like this didn't know that there were two-zone speaker systems kind of surprised me. So
it kind of suggests that it's really an old-fashioned idea, doesn't it? I can understand why AV receivers and that type of stuff that you're going to use in your home entertainment system only have one zone. You're not going to set up a second set of speakers and a, you know, when you've got a huge mountain of tech and you're all aimed at one, all aimed at the sofa. So I can kind of see how it might have disappeared, but I don't understand why it's not a desirable thing, especially when multi-room stuff is really big. I mean, why not be able to do it with analog? You can.
Well, technically, it's not multi-room, but you can wire 50 feet of speaker cable to go into another room if you want to.
Sure.
It's not like wireless multi-room. You find these on Yamaha's network receivers, which I had one of some years ago, I think before the Sonos. These are the big, big 5.1, 7.1, but they also have two speaker zones and they're like all the connections you need and they have AirPlay. They're one of the few that still does AirPlay is Yamaha. When I was looking for the amplifier on Richer Sound, so I'll put a link to the website, I remember years ago when you're looking at an amplifier, you can check a bunch of boxes for things you want. You want USB, you want Bluetooth. And they used to have an AirPlay option and it's not there anymore. And when I search for AirPlay, I only find one device that has AirPlay and it's one of the Cambridge Audio network streaming things. So AirPlay seems to have dropped off the map for audio in general.
Why do you suppose?
Maybe Bluetooth is popular enough and it's easier and you don't need to have, I don't know. I don't think Apple, maybe Apple charges enough to license AirPlay that companies don't want to do it when they're making, you know, 100,000 amps. They don't want to pay $5 per license,
right,
or something.
Yeah, I guess so. And Bluetooth.
Bluetooth is more ubiquitous, right? Android devices don't do AirPlay.
And I don't think the audio quality differences are going to be that perceptible to most people. So why not Bluetooth?
Well, it depends. AirPlay is lossless. Mm-hmm. So when you stream AirPlay, say you're streaming from the music app on a Mac, the Mac converts it to Apple lossless. So it retains the quality of the file on your Mac, right? If it's a 256K AAC, it's still going to be that quality even though it's lossless. But if it's a lossless file on your Mac, it remains lossless. Bluetooth, however, until very recently, Bluetooth codecs weren't very good. They were all compressed with artifacts.
That's why I don't like it. I try to do as much direct.
Well, again, I'm going to try the Bluetooth later today and see how it sounds. This might be good enough. I've done some research. Apparently, it's quite good. And there's even a newer version coming out that's going to be for high resolution over Bluetooth.
You said might be good enough. So that says, that to me says right there, it's like you're not expecting, you know, it to be super great, but it might be adequate.
It's because I know that AirPlay is lossless and I'm used to it and I know how it works.
That's right.
So when I was setting up the amplifier, I first started by playing a CD, right? You plug the CD player in, you put it on, boom, sounds good, sounds really good.
That's what you do. That's the rules.
Then I go to the music app and I play something and it sounded a bit strange. The treble was really crispy and crunchy and distorted. Took me a while, but not 2 hours, to realize that for some reason I had EQ on with the music app on my iMac, which had the treble increased. And I turned it off and it sounds fine. But I don't know why. I must have done this to test something, but I didn't notice it on the Sonos amp previously. Maybe this one's more sensitive. So here's an interesting thing about Cambridge Audio, which may not be a positive aspect. There are no bass treble and balance controls on the amplifier.
Well, that suits me, but I understand how that might be disturbing to some people.
Somewhere on their website, they say that their philosophy is to serve the music as it is, right?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The problem is you're not always right in the middle of your speakers and you may want to tweak the balance. And in my particular listening area, I've had to move speakers to get it right. The other problem that I see, and I think this is actually a mistake on their part, as you get older, your sensitivity to high frequencies goes down. So you might want to increase the treble a bit.
Well, yes, that's happened to me for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't adjust it. I'm thinking about it now if I have, but I don't. I haven't. It hasn't been that distracting when listening to music for me. You know, mostly I'm listening to guitar sounds. You know, I'm not listening to.
Yeah, but you're used to not hearing the high end as you should.
I do miss cymbals. If I know where cymbals are, sometimes I can't hear them. It's like, hey, where's that hi-hat? Let's go. Let's ride. But in general, it hasn't bothered me.
So I'm satisfied. I think in our next episode. I think in our next episode, I'll talk about something else that is not ready, but will be by then. But I'm satisfied to have. I like that NAD amp. It had really good sound. I also like the fact that I bought a NAD CD player and you use the same remote. I mean, it may not be a big deal, but using the same remote for two devices is better than having two remotes.
Two is Duca. You know, the more remotes you have, the more dukkha you have in your life, the more you are suffering. So I think you're probably, that's too bad. That is too bad. Yeah. What an awful batch of experiences, though, you had.
Yeah.
It's so unusual to hear like that.
I wonder how much of this is, I'm not saying it's not karma, but how much of this is just the quality of manufacturing. I mean, the fact, so I went on a couple of Blue OS.
And shipping.
I went on a couple of Blue OS forum threads and people were saying that NAD has admitted that there's a problem and that their solution is to buy some sort of a thing that you put in between the output and the input to raise the gain, right?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds a bit.
That's not our problem.
No. You had one job and that, well, you had a lot of jobs with that, but making the subwoofer work is kind of obvious. So I almost regret that I bought the NAD CD player because at least with the Cambridge Audio, I would have had the same remote.
Yeah.
But it's fine. The other thing is Cambridge Audio has this color, which is a kind of like Apple Space Gray for all their stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, space gray.
It's their signature color. They don't have options. Now, the amplifier I got was available in a limited edition in black. So I bought the black so it matches the NAD CD player.
That's what you got to do. These are things you have to take in. Those are good considerations to make. I like those considerations.
But it's not the same black.
Oh.
It's not exactly the same black.
Well, you got to go down to the hardware store, buy a can of
it's
black
fine.
Paint and brush it on.
One thing I don't like about the amplifier is that there's no indication of what the volume is. If you remember on that NAD, you have the little LEDs under it going from red to green.
But can't you tell how loud it is by listening to it?
No, the risk is that you turn it on and it's really loud and you're not prepared. That for some reason you had a source that wasn't loud and you turned the volume up. I don't know if when you turn it off, it resets to a certain volume. I don't think so.
Well, I was just thinking of that because I know I've had amps that do that. They don't shut down, but they just go to like a quiet. Like an iPhone, Apple does that with most of their devices. As soon as you plug the headphones in, the volume drops considerably. And then, which I think is a good idea. But on the other hand, the price you pay is, oh, I got to turn it up again. Bam, 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 turn it up.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that. Speaking of Apple devices, I got another Apple device. Now, you probably know that I bought a HomePod Mini a year or so ago because I wanted to be able to use it as a hub for what is it? Thread?
Thread, yeah.
And so
the Thread home automation networking system.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that I would be prepared for that. And the HomePod Mini can act as a hub in that situation. So I got one, and I was lucky enough to get it, I think, for like $10 off. I think I got one for $90 or something like that. But I knew I wasn't going to use it that frequently. I put it in the kitchen, and I put it in a basket of plastic fruit. I bought a basket of plastic fruit specifically to put the orange HomePod Mini in so you could never see it. Occasionally, I would use it. Occasionally, I would listen to music in the kitchen. But anyway, for the most part, I was happy that I had one. Then, about a month ago, I saw them on sale, HomePod Minis, for $80. And I remember thinking, I should probably get one. But I didn't. Other things came up. Money situation wasn't good at the time, whatever. But last week, Best Buy put them on sale for $70. That's $30 off the price. That's 30% off a HomePod Mini. I said, well, I'd be stupid if I didn't get one. So I did. But unfortunately, there's no place in my kitchen. I'm going to pair them. There's no place in my kitchen that satisfies my desire for symmetry where I can put two HomePod Minis, I thought, effectively. So I said, well, where can I put two speakers? I already have two. I have four speakers in the room I'm in now. I have two speakers just the way I like them in the living room. I said, well, I could put them in the bedroom, I suppose. And so that's what I did. I set them up in the bedroom. I put them a little off the floor. And I thought what I'd try to do is, what was the sleep thing we were talking about?
The Max Richter.
Yeah. I thought, is that available? And or other sleep music. I thought I'd give that a try. Listen to some, sleep music. Apple Music has a ton of sleep playlists, but some of them are a little too new agey for me. And then I thought, well, I got some Eno generative stuff I could listen to, but I might like to listen to Max Richter because I think that'll be a fun experiment. And quite frankly, these HomePod Minis do sound quite good. You can't get Dolby Atmos.
In a stereo pair, they sound
quite good. Yeah, they do.
Alone, it's kind of flat.
I had to reduce the bass. That's how good they sound. They have great range and the sense of... It's clean and robust, as I like to say. It's clean and robust. There's nothing there that shouldn't be there. It's nice. Surprisingly so. Anyway, I know I'm late to the HomePod party, but I'm pretty impressed with that. I'm assuming the big ones sound really good too. You still use those, right?
I've moved those up to my bedroom. They're very nice for that sort of space. I must admit that the whole spatial audio has just become, okay, it's there. I don't notice it anymore when something is in Dolby Atmos. It was nice in the beginning that you recognize. It's like when you first set up a 5.1 system for a TV and you're always aware of it. And then it's just natural. It just kind of makes sense. So I think the large HomePod sound very good in a stereo pair. I think as in the previous HomePod, when it was just a single HomePod, it's a little bit limiting. It's not as good as... It's not worth the price as a single HomePod. I think together, they're still expensive, but you get really good sound when you've got a stereo pair.
They, as I said, these HomePod Minis were going for $70 at Best Buy, which I don't know if they're trying to flush the stock or whatever, because I did see someone mention a rumor that there might be a HomePod Mini 2. Now, I don't know if that, I don't know. But it seems to me that they're moving these things at $70 each. They must be making room for something.
I think I just read that the HomePod Mini was introduced in a few new countries this week. So I don't think they're planning to get rid of it anytime soon. It's not a device that needs an upgrade. There have been rumors about a full-size HomePod with a display. I don't really get the point. You've got a phone for the display. These are not devices that get updated every year. So I wouldn't expect a new HomePod Mini. I still want a home bar, which is the sound bar with Apple TV built into it. That's what I want. Although even I've got my Sonos Arc and I wouldn't replace it, you know, with an Apple home bar. So, but that's where I think they need to go. Would they come up with something in between the Mini and the full-size HomePod? I doubt it. There is a big price differential.
I think I saw HomePods on sale recently for $50 off. So that right there is your tween.
Yeah.
You know, when they go on sale, that's the tween. You get the HomePod.
But Apple never puts them on sale. It's only third parties who do that.
Well, I wonder how that's connived one way or another. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it could be the manufacturer who says, you know, you could put this on sale now for a while.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it, by the way, if you want to keep seeing our stock or whatever they say. I'm sure it's to everybody's advantage. They sold one to me. They wouldn't have sold one otherwise.
Did you get the same color?
Of course. Two orange ones.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I don't know. I thought about getting a different color, but, you know, I can't do it. It goes against my sense of... Of synchronicity and
no
and,
symmetry. You
know, symmetry. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Well, and synchronicity too. But yeah, I could not cope with that in my bedroom. First thing I see in the morning, two different color HomePod minis. I want to blow my brains out.
Okay. Should we do next track picks?
Let's do that.
So my next track pick this week is something that I was only able to play in its entirety because I have a new CD player.
Oh,
it is a remastered and expanded 35th anniversary edition of the Drudy Collins transcendent 1989 album, Vinnie Riley. Vinnie Riley is, of course, the Drudy Collins, along with Bruce Mitchell, who's the drummer. Arguably, this is Vinnie's best mid-career album. It's innovative. It uses electronics. In 1989, right, it's using electronics. It's using dance beats, and it's got rhythms that he hadn't been doing previously. So this remastered edition comes in a box set. You can get the album itself on Apple Music or individually. And there's a 5-disc box set. The first disc is the Vinnie Riley album with a couple of extra tracks. The second disc is the Sporadic Recordings, which is an album that was relatively rare on LP back in the day, plus a whole bunch of extra bonus tracks and demos and things like that. The third one is WOMAD Live EP, which was a 5-track EP from the WOMAD Festival, which that was the world music thing that Peter Gabriel set up in the 80s. It includes another bunch of demos. The fourth one is Live in Porto in Portugal in 1988. And the fifth one is a 3-inch CD. I know very well how I got my note wrong. It's basically a studio outtake. It's 2 minutes long and it's a really nice track and then he flubs and then you hear them talking and so without the CD player, I would have to look at this little mini CD and not be able to play it. I'd try to put it in my phone and, you know, I never actually owned a mini CD before in my life. I never bought a CD single. I never had anything that had an additional mini CD.
I've never owned one myself, but I've seen them sent by record companies to radio stations as singles just as attention getters. But, yeah. You know, I don't think anybody collected them. They didn't think they were worthwhile.
Okay, what have you got this week?
In case you haven't picked up on it, I'm a big Sex Pistols fan. When their album, Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols, came out, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I'd already liked some punk stuff. I was listening to the Ramones and some other British punk bands, but they took the cake. They were just it. And the album sounded so great, partly because Bill Price and Chris Thomas were the producers on it. They, of course, had produced famously Clash albums and Pretenders stuff, and they didn't work together, but separately they are responsible for a lot of other great rock and roll music from the 70s and 80s. Whenever I run into someone who likes the Sex Pistols, I say, sure, you have Never Mind the Bollocks, but what other Sex Pistols albums do you have? And since that's their only studio album, most people go, well, shortly after they broke up, after Johnny Rotten left the band, Malcolm McLaren put out a movie called The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, and the soundtrack for that came out with, it was backed with another album called Who Killed Bambi. And these songs were, some were recorded with Johnny Rotten, others were recorded with the three remaining guys in the band, or two remaining guys in the band after Sid bought it. And in order to have all of these albums, you had to have three albums. Well, wouldn't it be great if they had one record with all the good stuff on it? Well, they do. And there are some lousy compilation albums out there. But the best one I've ever found is one the actual Sex Pistols put out called The Original Recordings. It's got all the stuff from Nevermind the Bollocks and all the good stuff from that double album I just talked about, including some really fabulous covers, like they do a version of The Who's Substitute. They do I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, Lonely Boy, Silly Thing, Come On Everybody, Something Else, and a lot of the B-sides from their singles, including my favorite song of all time, Did You Know Wrong, which is the flip side of God Save the Queen. So if you are a Sex Pistols fan and you want to have everything in one place, pick up the Sex Pistols, The Original Recordings. It's my next track. This was episode number 281 of The Next Track. Thanks for listening. You can start or join a conversation in the comments section of this episode's show page at our website, where you'll also find links to some of the things we talked about in the show notes for this episode. Just visit thenexttrack.com. We hope you'll support The Next Track by making a regular donation via Patreon. We're ad-free and self-sustaining, so we really depend on the listener support of our Patreon patrons to keep us going. Visit patreon.com/thenexttrack. I'm Doug Adams. And for Kirk McElhern, thanks again. We'll talk to you next time.